As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that time, Jersey.
4:40 p.m. Central Time. I just want everyone to know, right now, the clock just turned. We hit record at 4:40 p.m. Central Time on Monday, March 13th. Welcome to this edition of Time's Ours. Yes, we are timestamping it like we may end up needing this later in a disaster movie of some sort, because when we sit down to record around this time of year, things tend to happen. But the Chiefs did us a little bit of a favor today because they made a big splash early in the opening of the legal tampering period. And man, I just think it's incredible that all these deals got worked out as quickly as they did. The Chiefs so quick on their toes to, you know, see Andrew Wiley depart, and bam, they had a plan and a full contract presumably ready to go. I mean, it's just a miracle. Obviously, the tampering of all of this is well documented, but we really do have what I think, have any wood here I can knock on? There's my desk. I think we will have gotten the biggest swing, the biggest splash the Chiefs are going to give us in this very, very early portion of free agency, and we're all here to talk about it. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser. Juwan Taylor, the newest member of the Kansas City Chiefs, we'll talk about exactly how that all came together. Andrew Wiley reuniting with Eric Bieniemy in Washington. And I've given you the timestamp because if something does break in this show, we're just going to power through, you know? We'll just talk about it. I mean, tough to see Chiefs legend Patrick Peterson, you know, coming back to the AFC. That one was certainly startling. Sam Darnold going to the Niners. I can't wait for him to be a Super Bowl MVP this year because Kyle Shanahan's there. Any other major move so far today, Nate, that really caught your eye? I saw Raheem Nunez-Roches got a new deal.
Yeah.
Actual Chiefs legend.
Yes. It's great to be with you all. I really hope something happens in the next hour. Something that, you know,
something like smaller than Juwan Taylor.
Look, I
well, physically smaller than that would not be that hard. He's a large.
It doesn't necessarily have to be about the Chiefs. Okay. We're waiting, Aaron.
Oh yeah. Just I'm hold my breath.
Just let us know, dog. Like, and by the way, if you could do it within the next, I don't know, 58 minutes, that would be great. Cause one of the more fascinating parts of earlier today on Monday was, I mean, we getting the Aaron Rodgers news first, right? Like that's gonna really set this thing off. And it's like, nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Like you can just see the pain in every person's face on television.
Yeah. Ian and Adam are not having fun. They are like, they are just, I feel for them.
Yeah, and like, I know what it's like, you know. Obviously, they have the whole league to survey. I only have, you know, really one team, and you kind of see things, you know, going across. But like, yeah, you know, like I think a lot of agents were like, "So, what we doing? Where are we going? Like, I wanna get this thing moving." Now, I think some players have obviously gotten their money when it was legally time for them to agree to a deal. The fun part about today was you could tell the Chiefs called the Houston Texans and said, hey, are you serious about Laremy Tunsil? And the question that I posed to both of you earlier today, and I mean, this is how quickly things go. So obviously this stuff sort of trickles out later than when it's happening. But it was clear to me that, hey, what if, you know, the question I posed to both Josh and Seth is, Laremy Tunsil for a second round pick, knowing that you have to give an extension, knowing that it's bigger than what he's making right now, which is around $22 million a year. Josh?
I was a little bit worried about it having to be a first. If you offered me that deal for a second, I think I would have done it.
Now, Houston obviously would say, hey, I want a first.
Right.
Because he's really good. And the Chiefs are like, well, my owner says I can't trade you my first round pick because the draft, you see, is in my city. So what if we can we start with a two? Seth?
Oh, I would have done it for a two all day. Tunsil's a good player.
And then the extension?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, the extension, it would have had to be, I mean, I don't think you reset Laremy Tunsil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're
yeah. Not the shiny Christmas stuff. You were good.
5 minutes in.
Oh my goodness. Laremy Tunsil, I don't think you're resetting him for 22 mil a year. I think it's 25 mil. I think it resets the market. He's good enough that he's a market resetter, I think.
And young enough too. He's 29.
Yep, and young enough, you know, 29, you know, he's not a wide receiver and you know or a corner or something. So I would have done that too, for sure. And so you're probably talking something like, you know, 25 mil a year and then, you know, probably something like what, 80 guaranteed, give or take? Probably 80, 90 guaranteed. And I would have done that. And all the stuff we talked about last week, I think it was last week, where I just said, I just don't think you can give that to Orlando Brown Jr. Because he's just not, particularly in pass protection, he's just not consistent enough.
He's not Laremy Tunsil.
Exactly. As I so eloquently said. You know what? It's a mistake to say Orlando Brown Jr. is not consistent. He is the same dude he's been. But he consistently has some lapses in pass protection. You know, the thing, he turns every dude into the same guy. Sometimes that's a compliment. Sometimes you really want to see your left tackle, if you're paying him $25 million a year, dominate inferior opponents. And that's not Orlando Brown. That's not who he is. Because he turns every person, for the most part, into the same guy. So Tunsil would have done it in a heartbeat, especially for a second-round pick. But they've elected to go in a different direction.
Now, they had enough conversations to say, they probably don't want our second. We don't want to give up our first. Hey, did you review the film of Juwan Taylor? And you talked to his agent, right? I mean, we're not going to say that publicly out loud, but like you may have seen him at the combine. And look, I will put this as painstakingly plain as I can. Chiefs go, hey, we got an idea. You want to play left tackle? Juwan says, I think I'm a pretty good athlete. Agent says, hell yeah.
I'm certain you can do this, Juwan.
So then it comes down to, well, hey, the one little bit of leverage we got when you almost always have to overpay is, but you've never done it in this league. You never done it at the highest level. We'll give you the opportunity, but you've never done it before. And so they found financial compromise in a way that they never found with Orlando Brown. It is fascinating to me that the moment Orlando Brown joined the Chiefs, he had one thing in mind from a financial standpoint. I want to make more money than Ronnie Stanley. I want to make my contract needs to have three digits before the first comma. because Ronnie Stanley got 98.8 over a 5-year period, which puts him slightly under $20 million a year. Obviously, he earned 16 last year. That is technically where you're starting from the franchise tag position. But that's not really where they were starting from. How about 22 to 23 to, you know, hey, I didn't give up any sacks in the Super Bowl. One could argue you should have given me that Trent Williams money. The Chiefs have made it clear. We can give the largest contract to the league's perhaps most talented quarterback in the history of the sport. And Seth, I think we're getting to a place with Chris Jones where they can say, hey, he's the best guy on our defense. He has deserved the right to be either one or really 1B at the defensive tackle position. But we not giving money to the highest paid receiver, and we're not giving out the highest paid contract for a left tackle. So in essence, out of all of these circumstances, out of all these decisions, the Chiefs may have found an ulterior solution where they got a comparable player to be the fourth highest paid left tackle when their left tackle that they just had was never going to sign a contract of such. Right. And you don't have to give up any first or second round picks for said player who is younger than Laremy Tunsil, who you did not have to trade for like Orlando Brown. This is where creativity and ingenuity really do serve the coaching staff and the front office. We will see if this works out, but I just want to bring everybody along. Jawan Taylor could make this compromise because he's going from one team to a better team. He's going from one position to a better position. He's going from one quarterback to a better quarterback. You could argue one good coach to a great coach. Perhaps an okay city to a cool city. And he was willing to compromise on the money. He was willing to negotiate. From the Chiefs' standpoint, they felt fairly. And the agent saying, hallelujah, we gonna definitely make more than Mike McGlinchey. Come holla at us.
I'm sorry. The minute you talked about, you know, you kind of sideways mentioned Jacksonville, all I could picture was the dude from The Good Place.
Me too.
Like, Bortles. Like, that guy is one of my all-time favorite TV characters. That's the Jaguars cut Blake Bortles. Like, I was, oh, sorry.
Have we talked about The Good Place, Seth? I watched it relatively recently. I wasn't watching it when it was live. It's free endorsement, free plug for The Good Place, a tremendous television show.
Yeah, that rare show that has twists that you don't actually anticipate. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. Like, I mean, you know, I enjoyed it. And you had multiple like moments where you actually laugh out loud, which is fun. It's no Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm still waiting for you to kind of accidentally make your way to that. But
I'm sure I'll get there. This is going to turn into a whole conversation about Mike Schur's book that he wrote after making The Good Place that I also would recommend. It's great. But that's not what anyone's here to listen to us talk about. And I am self-conscious about that because it's so early in the show. Remind me about Mike Schur's book at minute 55 if we've run out of steam.
I like it.
And I want, Nate was kind of kicking it to you, Seth, but I wanted to give just a couple of like factoids here on the front end if people have not been on TweetDeck all day long, like some of us here who really need to figure out our screen time. The deal for Jawan Taylor, he was drafted by the Jags, 35th overall in 2019. He has been a right tackle for all but a small handful of snaps in the NFL. He's played every game every year. And the deal is for $80 million with $60 million guaranteed over the course of 4 years. And as I mentioned earlier, Andrew Wiley back in Washington, that happened a little bit before. Obviously, I don't think those things have to be directly correlated. But as these parts move, and as we sit here now, Orlando Brown does not have a deal. Nate mentioned the Mike McGlinchey contract that made all of our eyebrows go pretty far up. But it is a very interesting strategy here, as Nate has laid out, for a player who's been good, and I've seen the word ascending attached to him a lot because he is 25 years old and will be still 25 when the season begins. What do you making of this, Seth, as someone who I should mention in the Chief from the North newsletter. If I were Brett Veach, part three, at offensive tackle, this smart fellow over here at mnchiefsfan.substack.com said first choice, Juwan Taylor, right tackle.
You know, it's good at times, you know, when you've already established something, you don't feel the need to go back and hammer the point home over and over and over. But you do feel the need just every now and then, just a little reminder. You know what I mean? Like every night, every single night, no matter what, I tell my kids I love them. And I always add with them also, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And as teenagers, they are testing that theory, but that's okay. You got to test theories. You know what I mean? That's science. Got to test it out. Let's see if the old man means it. Fair enough. And I do. So I tell them that every night. I tell my wife every time I get off the phone with her that I love her. You got to remind people. And today, I just, you know, just a little reminder, people, that I know ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's just simply true.
It's just simply, some things are just true. I love my kids. I love my wife.
Uh-huh.
And I know ball.
And you know ball.
No,
now look, I mean, if it's someone who...
See, I take this down, Josh. It's an and, not a but. Okay? These are real things that we got to make sure we got on the cards before we go out there and say things publicly or in private. It's always an and, not a but.
Seth, I am ready for you to change your Twitter bio. I feel like it's been the same for a long time. If you just change it to, I love my kids, I love my wife, I know ball, I think that would be a good evolution for your brand. And look, I mean, if someone who really knew ball made this prediction, maybe there would have been some foreshadowing about moving from right tackle to left tackle. It's just that there's always room for improvement, even as the superior ball knower.
Yep, that's so true. That's so true. My ball knowing has yet to be completed. And, we're all a work in progress, aren't we?
You never stop loving your wife and kids, you know? You love them as an active thing. You know ball actively, and there's still room for that to grow.
Love grows. This is, you know, my ball knowing is a lot like my sanctification. Every day, you know, just a little bit closer. Said the Nazarene. All right, we're not going to do this. I'm sorry.
I'm wearing a Mid-America sweater right now, man. It just started glowing when you said that. I got to take this off.
That joke landed with like my dad, you, Kent Swanson, and like no one else.
I mean, we've got
like
some
three Baptist people listening. Like, what did he just say?
Yes, that's what I actually think the real hit rate is. It's not the people who laughed at it. It's the people who went, I don't think that's very funny.
Oh, interesting. I wasn't aware that Seth was a complete and total pagan. Anyway, let's move away from that. Taylor. Oh, just by the way.
I could have just talked about the Good Place book, man.
If I'm going to prognosticate a little bit, I'm just saying, Zach Allen, Cardinals defensive end. Now, he's been a 34 defensive end, by and large, but he does have some edge snaps. Big dude, lots of length, lots of strength. Tough guy. I'm just saying. Maybe I'm saying wrong. It's hard to say. But I'm just saying. So anyway, Juwan Taylor.
A person who knows ball is saying. I mean, that's just
where I'm at. Yeah, I'm saying that as someone who knows ball. So it's not, again, one leg at a, my pants on one leg at a time, but just someone who knows ball while I do it. So with Taylor, the money thing was part of what got me, even when I was thinking, okay, well, they'd move him to right tackle or they keep him at right tackle. And that was just kind of an assumption. I've listened to a lot of smart guys talk about it, and apparently it's either something you can do or something you can't, which is a really, you know, wow, Seth, really? But no, like, it's like something, if you can do it, great. If you can't, it cannot be coached into you, supposedly. That's just what I'm told. It's like, you know, hey, you can either wipe your butt with both hands or you can't.
That seems unnecessary. One at a time, always gotten it done for me.
Dang it, Josh.
I don't even know how I would. I'll be right back.
Now's not the time for experimentation, okay?
Don't tell Brett Veach.
So I'm assuming there was a conversation with the player. Hey, you think you could flip over? Now, one interesting thing, in a couple games that I've watched now, he's not lined up as an actual left tackle, so it's not going to count as those snaps. But you know how different offensive lines, they'll kind of overload one side or the other. They'll only have like the guard on the right side.
Sure. Yeah.
The Jags do that occasionally. So he has to line up with a left tackle stance, even though he knows, you know, it's almost always in run plays. Mm-hmm. So he's done that a few times. He doesn't look terribly uncomfortable. So, I mean, I don't know, but I do know pretty good feet, pretty good athlete. Get out in space. Apparently had like a lousy run blocking grade with PFF.
Mm-hmm. I did see this, and that is the antithesis of Orlando Brown.
Yeah, they went out and found bizarro Orlando Brown. It's like, well, we'll show you, Orlando. We don't need to pay you. We're going to find a guy who's the exact opposite. Here's the interesting thing, though. Like, if you go back, so Chiefs fans who like to go back and grind the film a little bit, go check out the first Jags-Colts game where I've got him. I graded him out with 10 run-blocking wins in that game. Now, it's either he's not plowing straight ahead one-on-one. He'll help with a combo block or a double team, but he can get some movement there. But that dude can get out into space. He can move a little. Do you guys know anyone who really likes to test the edges of defenses? Because I can't figure out
who Eric might... Bieniemy did, but he's not here anymore.
Yeah. But it's just interesting. If you were to watch Jawan Taylor, say you removed the colors from the uniforms and, I don't know, put stickers over the decals to where you couldn't tell. Decals? Anyway, what team they were. So you couldn't tell what team they were playing for. And you watched Orlando Brown play and you watched Jawan Taylor play. And you said, which one of these guys is a fit for Andy Reid's offense? 99.999% of the world would pick Taylor.
Yeah.
And that other one would have been an accident. You know, someone fell asleep or whatever.
Hmm. Which is interesting, right? Because like the physical traits being there again, like the long arms and all of those things. But stylistically, bizarro Orlando Brown, I mean, you guys should go back and forth on this a little bit because you also, Seth, since the last show, published your Orlando Brown film review, which I was going through it this morning, and I would still say it's worth people's time because we're now still talking about the position and kind of why the Chiefs made this move. It's not as predictive anymore because there's virtually no path for him to return to Kansas City. If I had to hazard a guess, despite a couple of speculative tweets I've seen. I don't think they're going to have three $20 million offensive linemen, but you know, I mean, you could dream. But it's interesting to see it through the lens more recently of the pros and cons of turning everybody into the same guy and the limitations that the Chiefs had to sort of lean towards where his season got better as they went on, maybe because the Chiefs were giving him more help as the year went on. And I'm curious how that informed where you're at now with Taylor, because bizarro Orlando Brown is a hilariously good way of framing him, I think.
It's so I'm through now about 2.5 games watching Jawan Taylor. And what's great about Taylor's film from last year is the games I'm watching are Philly, Indy, Vegas, Dallas. I might go with the wild card game with the Chargers. And so you're seeing him matched up against Riddick, Crosby and Parsons for three of those four matchups. And I picked Indy because I was like, I got to have a control in here somewhere. Like, let's see how he does against a non-freak of nature. Sorry, Colts. Like, you guys beat the Chiefs last year. So, he's, and again, this is all preliminary. I'm going to write about it tomorrow. I'm even kicking around the idea of unlocking it for everyone just to tick Josh off. But he is a very good pass protector. Now, these are all, again, this is on the right side. But we've left the era of the NFL to where right side means you don't need to be good in pass protection. Like, you just heard the guys that I just ticked off that he was going against. Like, you can't be like, oh, our right tackle doesn't need to, you know, pass block. Well, he's just going up against, checks notes, Max Crosby tomorrow. Like, you have to be good at it. And the Jags trusted him on an island against a lot of guys. Now, they provided some help. They're not stupid. You know, Trent Williams gets help at times, although not quite that often. But he can be trusted, at least in my, you know, 2.5 games that I'm in, against high-level guys and win much more than he loses. And that's, again, as a pass blocker, which is exponentially more important than what he does as a run blocker with the Chiefs. Like, with the Chiefs, if you can just get in space and get down the field and get in the way, Andy can work with that. That dog will hunt.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What do you think, Nate? What else are we supposed to expect at this point? I mean, I think you've laid out the path of how and why this happened and how and why this was the solution for the Chiefs at left tackle. And I want to look forward a little bit to what the other options might be. But anything else from how Juwan Taylor became a Chief today?
No, I think we touched on most of it. I do think what's interesting now is because this happens every year. And so I don't want to compare years because obviously there's different players at different positions in the market. But you are seeing, Andrew Wiley, I think, get a very nice raise, which is what I've been writing for weeks now.
Obviously, good on him.
With the Commanders. Obviously, that's Eric Bieniemy's offense. You know, the Chicago Bears have done something I thought fairly fascinating, in addition to Ryan Poles obviously making the trade for the number one pick to Carolina on Friday. The Bears have chosen to really address some of their interior offensive linemen when the perception was, hey, maybe that is a potential landing spot for Orlando Brown. I'm trying to figure out what the Atlanta Falcons are doing. Because they got a lot of money to spend as well. And they've sort of spray shot the entire area. They have not been particularly... it's just been a little bit interesting. The safety market today, I thought, was going to be more interesting than the corner market. That has been the case. Juan Thornhill has not flown off the board, as they would say, if he was in a draft. But
Jesse Bates got that big bag of money that you mentioned from Atlanta.
Yep.
Thornhill being a Bengal is going to be hard for me personally, but I'll get over it.
But
that hasn't officially happened.
Bengals need a safety.
Yeah.
Just want to put that out there. Someone said this to me earlier today. There's more than just Bill Belichick, right? Who's the Patriots general manager, team president, whatever it is?
Isn't Bill Belichick like the alpha and the omega, the beginning and the end?
Yeah.
The first and the last?
Technically, yes. But there's people in the front office is ultimately what I'm trying to get at. It's not just Bill.
I like to imagine him in an enormous conference room with like 50 chairs, but he's only sitting in his chair. There's no one else in there.
Well, his dog's there too.
Ooh, good call.
So,
Matt Groh is the director of player personnel.
Let's go, Matt.
On Patriots.com, you've got Robert Kraft, chairman and CEO, and then team president, Jonathan Kraft.
That's Groh, who it
director
is.
Of player that's personnel. What I'm thinking and that, of. Dude, yes, that's yes. The whole page.
Yeah, that's what it I'm thinking
Kraft,
of. Jonathan Kraft.
And Matt.
Yes, it's Jonathan Kraft. So, again, just saying, y'all, how you think the negotiation will go? Because, look, they have Isaiah Wynn. So there's a chance he could resign with them. But, you know, the Patriots are in position to maybe upgrade a left tackle. I think most people can argue that Orlando Brown would be an upgrade at left tackle based on their production from that position last year. How do you think the negotiation is going to go between Kraft, Belichick, and Orlando Brown?
tensely.
So we kind of talked about what you're, I'm not saying you're implying, what I'm inferring from what you're implying.
Okay. Yes, give me outs.
Last year I talked about the fact that I've been practicing law about 8 or 9 years now. And I've been doing it long enough to see a lot of new attorneys come in. And when new attorneys come in, negotiating against them is the worst. Hmm. And everyone knows it. Everyone that's been doing this job for a minute knows it. Because, you know, this cowboy is going to come in and show all these people how it's done. I'm going to fight for my client. The rest of these loser, you know, these washed up loser defense attorneys, you know, they won't fight for you like I will. I'm going to challenge everything. I'm going to file every motion. Well, someone who's been practicing a minute knows that's not the best way to practice law. Looks great on a billboard, but it doesn't really work because you just make everyone mad. Brown's agent has him. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that's, I don't know, maybe he has other clients now, but he was his first client.
First NFL client.
His first
NFL
client.
He had a couple of hockey clients, I think, if memory serves.
So he's negotiated some sports contracts before.
Yeah, but I'm just giving, that's just more context. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying.
And so I'm just curious. I'm curious what things look like for Brown. Because based on everything we're seeing, and the team obviously kind of let it loose a little bit, what they offered him last year, you know, all that fun stuff. But I think that was intentional. Because what they offered him last year, based on the reports, was a little more than what they just gave Taylor a year later. Which is at least...
Let me run that for you. The structure of it is not as sound.
Right. There's a lot. $60 million guaranteed is the part of this deal that got me a little
bit. Yes. And that is, again, that's why the Ronnie Stanley contract is so, it's like, it's a bit ironic in some ways. But they gave it to a younger player who they think is more athletic and they feel like their coaching staff can. But again, there was what they felt more fair negotiations. But look, Ronnie got 64 fully guaranteed. So within context of that, but Taylor making slightly more money, you know, annually in essence, like it's a pretty, yeah, it's just, it's tough. Orlando Brown's agent's name is Michael Portner. We should probably, let people know that, I've obviously written his name in stories. I've talked to him obviously, before, but yeah. Do the Bills have any money?
Well, and that's, you start
they
getting
don't.
This interesting.
It's like, I need to, I don't know. Like I'm sure people are not on spot track or over the cap as much as we are. I just want to tell everybody, delay, pause. They don't, the Bills have no money. Okay. At least not left tackle money is all I'm saying, but the Bills could use an upgrade at left tackle. So, just saying, it is not as advantageous as I think I could have anticipated looking at it from as much of a objectable view as I can. And I just want to let people know that, because, you know, I get the sense that Orlando Brown will be just fine, but I don't know if the market has shifted in the way that maybe he anticipated or that was going to be most favorable or most advantageous to him is ultimately what I'm trying to say, with some landing spots now off the board through the first, you know, half day of real free agency.
With that being said, I think we will certainly, I'm sure we will hear from Juwan Taylor before too terribly long. Maybe we get him in a Zoom presser or something before next week's episode. I don't know, Nate, how confident.
Fly this man through the new KCI. What are we doing?
Ooh, let's do that. Let's bring him in the new airport.
Like, tell me when he lands so we can have the first, you know, ever, like, player to walk. Like, okay, I'm gonna tell a lie here. Not a lie, but I'm going to tell, I don't want to say if it's a secret, but maybe people didn't think about it a ton. When the Chiefs, you can look this up, ladies and gentlemen. Have I told the Joe Montana story?
I don't know.
Seth, have I told this?
I don't think you have.
I don't think so.
Let me find this thing. There's an image. And I just want to remind people, somebody will find it. I'm sure it's the internet. Now, I have to remind people here, by the way, this is a quick airport history sidebar. I have to remind people that when Kansas, not people from my own hometown, but like this was a big discussion at the combine, because obviously the Kansas City new airport opened in the midst of combine talks. So I had to say this to a lot of people, basically, because obviously they all know from Kansas City. The old airport was supposed to be quite innovative and aspirational. And I know you can find it to be quite convenient, ma'am or sir, but the airport was basically obsolete within minutes of it being opened for security reasons. And because TWA belly flopped and it sucked and it was terrible. And then in 1993, Joe Montana showed up at MCI, and the look on this man's face was, where in the world am I? Because he landed in the most obsolete modern airport in American history. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating, but you get my point. The most obsolete airport at that time in the early 90s, with thousands of Chiefs fans awaiting him. Thousands, okay? All the TV cameras crews were there. He was Joe Montana. Again, I wrote this years ago. Imagine if Tom Brady just joined the Chiefs, because that was basically what happened. All this is to say is Kansas City has a marvelous new airport. Everybody should be praised for it. I don't know how much it costs, but I'm glad to have paid the taxes for it, because we are in modern times. It is lovely. You should go check it out. But I'm just saying, like, not every free agent or possible free agent has to fly through the tiny, and I mean tiny, Kansas City downtown airport, so that we never show them what we showed Joe Montana in 1993. So if y'all wondering, hey, why did Chiefs get graded so poorly on the travel standpoint in the players survey, dog? We had the best, the city employs the best passer of the football, who flies out of the worst airport in the league up until like a couple of weeks ago. So when they called Marquez Valdes-Scantling, hey dog, why don't you come through? Yeah, we're going to get you on this jet and we're going to fly you to where you see the buildings, okay?
I'm surprised they hadn't turned Arrowhead into a helipad yet. Like, just, hey, right? we're just going to get you straight to the facilities. We can't risk you seeing any of this.
Look, we go, there's a specific route. Look at that nice downtown that's getting better by the year, you could argue. Mm-hmm. In terms of appeal, in terms of aesthetics, in terms of, again, modernization. But like, hey, like, Odell Beckham is not flying through MCI, guys. He's just not. And I mentioned Odell Beckham Jr. because, you know, recent things. So yeah, this is a bit too much. I can't take back anything that I've said, but like, someone will find the image of Joe Montana being like, yo. And it's like, don't you feel the love? And he's like, yeah, but like, yo. There are birds flying through this.
No, hold on. Now, this is the first thing I'm going to object to. If there is not a bird inside an airport, I don't trust that airport.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I expect birds in the airport. Yeah, I saw a bird in the Atlanta airport. You know, I'm cool with the birds.
It's the coal mine thing. It's like, what? Where are the birds? What happened to the birds? That's funny. And maybe I'll need to fly into Kansas City sometime instead of driving down there. Because it's like a 10-hour drive from where I am.
It's a lot faster. Just
although I'm not sure how many flights there are from Fargo to Kansas City. And by the time I drive to Minneapolis, I've already driven 3.5 hours. So it's like,
good Lord. Seth, have you ever considered moving to, what's the word, civilization?
No, I lived there for a couple years. Didn't care for it. I want to live somewhere where I am literally a 1 minute drive from putting a kayak on.
Okay. And I want to live somewhere with where I'm within 3 or 4 hours of a grocery store. So, I mean, we have different priorities.
Nah, you just got to kill a bear every now and then. And then, you know, you're cool.
I have some important breaking news. We knew we were going to be waiting on some news today, and I think this is part of one of the news items that I want to make sure we mention here. Tom Pelissero has tweeted, the Eagles have submitted a rule proposal that would allow players to wear number 0.
Yeah!
I support this wholeheartedly. This has
Agent
my full back.
Agent 0, let's go!
This should happen. Your thoughts?
It should say 0 and then agent above it.
Someone with the last name agent needs to get number 0.
I'm pretty sure that just becomes their number automatically.
Yeah, fair.
Man, Agent 0, what a time that was. Before
I just
you know.
Genuinely do think this rule should pass. Who's the number 0 on the Chiefs? Let's play that game and then we can go back to actual Chiefs things.
Number 0 on the Chiefs.
I think I got mine, actually. I feel pretty good about it. I think Kadarius Toney should be number 0.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how that didn't occur to me. Yeah, you're right.
I don't know, that's just the first one that popped into my mind. 19's kind of weird. I'm also looking at a bunch of pictures of Joe Montana wearing Chiefs 19 jerseys right now, which is also kind of strange. You know, number 19 for me in a Chiefs uniform, that's always going to be Josh Gordon or Cornell Powell. You know, I haven't fully decided yet. Kadarius Toney, number 0, I'll make it happen.
I like it.
Yes.
And then get Sky Moore to change his number from 24. Like, enough is enough. Like, I like Sky Moore, and I actually think that I think he's going to be fine. I think they've got some plans for him next year.
Put that on the dust jacket.
But, like, seriously, 24, like, it's messing with me. It's just not okay.
Do you think
okay.
Andy Reid thinks he's a running back still?
Yeah. Why is that running back running all these hitch routes from the slot? Like, what is he doing? But no, with the offensive line, here's just something interesting to me with Taylor. The Chiefs have really positioned themselves, and it sounds like you said, they're going to give him a shot at left tackle, kind of see how it goes. And they're going to know fairly early whether or not it's something he can do. If he's saying he can do it, I'm guessing he feels relatively comfortable doing it. Because again, from what I'm told, it's something you either can do or you cannot. And so I'm assuming they talked to him about it a little bit, how comfortable he is. And I'm comfortable anyone working with Andy Heck and Andy Reid on the line. That's great. He made a huge stride forward in his first year with like a real live coaching staff. So that's all great. But the big thing for me is that the Chiefs, they're clearly determined to not take a step back on the line. Mm. And if anything, maybe, I mean, depending, again, we'll see how he does. If he pass protects 90% as well at left tackle as the three games that I've now finished charting at right tackle, he will be an upgrade in pass protection next year. And that's, again, if he takes a step back, switching to the left side. His pass protection's solid. And that would be interesting for the Chiefs. I'm just curious what they decide to do on the right side. Or maybe they just, maybe they're still in on Tunsil. It's hard to say. I don't think they are, by the way. I'm just kidding, but. That'd be really funny.
Hey, I just want to call you back. See how you feeling about that second now. How you feeling about that second round?
Yeah, hey, look.
Hey, you know, we had some nice conversations, you know. Do you want me to buy you another drink? Because, you know, I'm obviously here and you're here and things haven't changed necessarily.
Look, there's a right tackle out there right now whose market hasn't really materialized the way he thought it might. And, you know, he played right tackle in Baltimore, I think. Maybe they bring him in and that'd be a pretty good bookend. That was Orlando Brown.
Yeah.
Joke, just in case. You guys didn't laugh, so I made me concerned that you guys didn't realize it wasn't.
No, I know exactly. I knew exactly who you were talking about. I was just going to let it sit there. I was just going to say, like, hey, you know, I mean, if you just, you know, one for
I didn't
one.
Really have the, I didn't have the courage for my convictions on that one. But I do want to just sort of, like, pitch this out to you guys and tell me if you think that this is the most likely way that this shakes out. Because starting with the idea that you're going to get really good pass pro out of Juwan Taylor in an offense with Patrick Mahomes playing quarterback. We've talked plenty about how nice it is when they can run the ball well. And maybe I'm just assuming that anyone who's making more than $10 million at a tackle position should be able to at least move some bodies in the running game. I'm just not that concerned about it. I don't know. Maybe I should be. We'll find out. I'll read your review, Seth, and you can tell me. But if you now pitched me on Juwan Taylor left tackle, Joe Tooney left guard, Creed Humphrey at center, another reason that they really can't be paying two tackles, by the way, because Creed's deal is not that far away from needing to get worked on.
Mm-hmm.
But and then Trey Smith at right guard and right tackle is your question mark. If they spent one of their, I don't know, first 2 day draft picks, I'm not even saying it's got to be 31, but if they spend a first, second, or third round pick on a tackle they really like, presumably on the right side, and then it's Lucas Niang and 2023 Mike Remmers or whoever that may be, maybe that's Prince Tega Winogo also getting thrown in there. I haven't mentioned Darian Kennard because I just haven't seen that man play football in a red jersey yet, so I really don't know. But if you gave me that front five of Lucas Niang, draft pick, maybe a veteran, I'm pretty comfortable with that, and I would have taken that. And I find myself being a relative middle of the pack member of the Orlando Brown fan club, where I feel like that there's been some extremes hit on all angles with him that has kind of made him a harder player to evaluate, but. You give me a chance to upgrade in pass protection a little bit, downgrade in the running game a tiny bit, and save a little bit of money, and then get younger at left tackle even, and way younger on the right side if they do end up having a rookie start there, or if it's Lucas Niang at right tackle. I'm still kind of down to see it. I know some people are kind of out on him as well, but I'm relatively comfortable with like training camp starting with those being the battles. Do you guys think that's – are you with me on that, or does it make you a little more nervous? And then also – is that the plan, or do we think we're going to have a bona fide, definite starting right tackle penciled in, maybe sharpied in when training camp starts?
No, I think for the financial reasons you mentioned, Josh, and for, I think, just the logical way you can come to these outcomes, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, they made an investment with a third round pick of Lucas Niang, and with a full off season, obviously more months removed from the knee injury, you could say that they owe it to Lucas Niang to see what he has, or to see if he can hold up for a 17-game, 20-game season that the Chiefs just went through, with obviously trying to do it now in the 2023 campaign. You know, if you wanna sign Taylor Lewan as the Mike Remmers sort of, you know, spot starter, veteran presence, knows what he's supposed to do. Now, obviously, Taylor Lewan played left tackle. He would be switching to right tackle, or he would be like a overqualified swing tackle, I guess you could say. I mean, yeah, that's certainly an avenue to perhaps pursue. But yeah, I think the Chiefs really do want to know what they have in Lucas Niang. And if you want to have competition with another third round pick at that position, you know, because they got two of them to play with, and that's also a different, you know, sort of, that's also a different way to create, you know, a reasonable level of competition without, you know, spending a ton of money, leaving some things open for the cap. But I mean, there's just something interesting about watching what Andrew Wiley just did. Now, he was going from never playing really tackle at the highest level to playing guard, to being thrusted into tackle, to getting, again, multiple off seasons to get better at left tackle. And then obviously you get better with experience. It's fascinating to see what Andrew Wiley just did, and to know that maybe Lucas Niang can have his own version of that with a different, obviously, adversity that he has to sort of, you know, overcome.
With that being said, if we're good on the tackle positions, we got a little bit of time left to talk about all the moves the Chiefs haven't made yet. Again, we're really, really, really early on here. As was it 1 o'clock or noon central time, maybe, that the legal tampering period opened up? It's been a blur today.
It was noon.
It was noon. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's still a whole lot of free agency game to be played, and I'm not trying to rush us through it, but in connection with some of the stuff you guys have been writing already all off season, Seth dropping the If I was Brett Veach part three, and Nate is like, Nate has a draft big board at this point already, which is just so far beyond where my brain is at right now. I'll try to catch up eventually, but it's just, I keep going, oh, next episode we'll talk draft stuff, and then something crazy happens.
Yeah.
But when you look at, I mean, right now, I think it's been a pretty quiet wide receiver market. I'm just kind of like mentally thinking if there's been any deals of that I've seen today.
I can't think of any today.
I can't either. And we mentioned the safeties already. Where are you guys? Where are you guys at right now on some of the targets you might like to see in these coming days, or just sort of what you can expect the Chiefs to focus on?
I want to see. To me, the entire thing for free agency was offensive line. You've got holes, obviously, at both tackle spots, and then defensive line. Right now, along the defensive line, they have Jones, which is great. And then Dana and Karlaftis, which is a nice little trio to build around, for sure. Dana can play positional versatility. Karlaftis can play. He can line up outside and line up inside at times. They're good for your system, all that stuff. But you need multiple more guys. And some of that, you know, you're going to round out with, you know, some draft guys, some, you know, mid-level or bottom of the box kind of free agent type signings, but they need another dude, and they actually could. And that's why we're like, I talk about like, say like a Zach Allen type, who I think is a pretty significantly better pass rusher than, you know, Dunlap or Clark were last year. Mm-hmm. You could actually upgrade on that initial front four.
I'd love to.
And that would be terrific. And then maybe you call Carlos Dunlap and say, hey, that was fun last year, huh? You want to do it again for another $3 million?
Calais Campbell getting cut today also set off a whole lot of those alarms for me.
Yes.
And he's 450 years old, and I don't care.
But he was good last year from everything I've heard.
And Joel Cullen connection, and also, yep. Can I blow your freaking mind with a Calais Campbell factoid that I found today?
I would love it.
He has played in a Super Bowl. Do you know which one?
No.
The Cardinals? No. I'm trying to think where he's played.
He has played for the Cardinals, Jags, and Ravens.
Was it the Cardinals?
It was Cardinals, Steelers.
Wow.
Dang. I thought everyone who played in that game was dead.
The Larry Fitzgerald, track him down like he's Liam Neeson. Go get him.
Yes. He was trying to get the ball back for Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald in that game. He had like two tackles. The leading rusher for the Cardinals in the Super Bowl was Edgerrin James.
Crazy.
Holy cow.
Crazy.
I actually forgot that he started off with the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's been
that long.
Not really. His last year in Arizona was 2016, but a lot of those Cardinals years got real forgettable if you were not an Arizona Cardinals fan.
Quick shout out to Aunt Bobby. Every year the Super Bowl is kind of like I do remember where I was for just about every Super Bowl in my life. I was hanging out with Aunt Bobby. God bless her. She's no longer with us, but like, shout out to her. I think her and I were rooting for the Cardinals. It did not go well at the end, but hey, but yeah, you mentioning that game makes me think, makes me think back to like just cool memories with the family. But man, hey, you know, Calais Campbell, 1 year, $4 million. You ready to ride?
Heartbeat.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat, he says. Well,
and that's, you know, really in terms of their pass rush rotation, you know, I assume they're gonna tender Tershawn Wharton. So he's a guy who's gonna be in the rotation.
Yep.
And I think he was on his way to developing under Cullen too, and Saunders got a bump from him. And so you get Calais Campbell on a mercenary contract. And then grab yourself a dude. And I'm not, that's no insult to Calais Campbell. I think he would say at this point in his career, he's a 300, 400 snap guy. He's not a 700, 800 snap guy. Get yourself a dude. And then you need a guy who can plug the middle, right? You know, sign Jonathan Hankins. Been doing it forever. I mean, that's what I'd like to see them really go after next. You know, assuming they don't just like trade for DeAndre Hopkins or whatever, which
It'll be 45 seconds after you stop recording.
Hello, I have a second round pick. Would you like? Are you interested, sir?
See, you know, the one thing for me is
although if Jalen Ramsey is going for a third, don't you dare give them a two.
Yeah, it's just like
but I like to remind everybody that two is a three. See what I did there? Ladies and gentlemen, it says first round pick. That ain't the first round. That says second round pick. That ain't the second round. It says third round compensatory pick. That might as well be a fifth round pick.
I don't know. I would love to see them do something to address the receiver spot. That's where I want them to go next, though, would be defensive line. It is weird, the total lack of movement with wide receivers. It's very quiet. And I don't know if that's because teams are waiting to see if something happens with Hopkins.
Hey, Josh, why are the linebackers taking all the money? Yeah,
If I knew that, the answer to that question.
Yeah. Off-ball linebackers, however.
Jermaine said, how much? How? My bags is already packed. salute. What's his name? I got to look it up. It's too many names, guys.
I'm going to learn all the names when I figure out where all these dudes land again. this is like Field Yates tweeted this out here just a second ago saying the slowest moving market so far in free agency has been at wide receiver as no wide receiver has agreed to terms on a reported deal yet today. Top options remain Odell Beckham Jr., Jacoby Myers, Juju, Adam Thielen, DJ Shark, and Alan Lazard. He doesn't mention Mecole Hardman, who's also out there. Obviously, it sounds like he's planning on moving on based off just a couple of tweets and stuff. Nothing hostile, but just like Tyreek Hill saying, go get paid, man.
Yeah. And by the way, TJ Edwards. Hey.
Yeah.
No one look at the last game film. Hey, salute to you, sir. Jermaine Edmonds.
Shout out to you.
Man, my bags is already packed.
guys, breaking news from Jeremy Fowler. Linebacker David Long is signing with the Dolphins, per source. No wide receivers yet, though.
I love David Long. By the way, Nate Tice.
I was converted. Yep, I was converted
Nate
on the athletic
Tice
football
got
show.
Me yeah, on yeah, it. Yeah. Yep, Nate Tice. Now, by the way, I told y'all, they a bunch of red hippers out there in Tennessee.
Yep.
And, man, he's the best one outside of Jeffrey Simmons.
There's something interesting I just saw, and again, I'm sorry, people. It's not a free agency thing.
Miami building a squad.
It's another rule change proposal by Philadelphia. They want to try to bring in the XFL thing to permit a team to maintain possession of the ball after a score by substituting one offensive play, 4th and 20 from the kicking team's 20 instead of an online kickoff attempt. As a fan of a team with Patrick LeVon Mahomes II, I am totally here for it.
Totally in favor.
I am 150,000,000% here for it. And I would tell Andy Reid, Andy, we are playing make it take it from now on. Because you can't tell me that Patrick Mahomes doesn't convert 40% of those.
Yeah, Andy Reid definitely going to be cutting edge when he realizes there's a little analytical advantage his quarterback could help him take. Definitely going to do that. Is there anything in the phrasing there, Seth, for real, not sarcastically here, about limitations on it? Because the XFL, it's fourth quarter down by...
It didn't say any limitations, and it didn't say only one time a game.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Make it, baby.
Because you're on the 20-yard line, and 4th and 20 is really hard, obviously. So I don't know if you really even need to limit that, because you're also running a risk of, hey, we just scored. Let's give the other team the ball back, not just in scoring position, but in the red zone. But you know what? Like, if you're the Chiefs, hey, let's say you gain, 38 yards on or 18 yards on the play. They're on the 38. That's not deadly. It's less than ideal. I don't know.
Chiefs defense survived that spot a few times late in the year. That's all right.
And all you need to do is convert it a third of the time. And as a defense, force them to kick field goals 2/3 of the times when they don't. That's it. And then it works out in your favor, points-wise. I don't know math. I know ball. What I just said may have been mathematically unbelievably incorrect. I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure everyone's aware of that.
Do you have a feel right now, Nate, on the receiver market again here real quickly? I mean, is Juju like out here hunting for a big deal on the open market? Is the receiver market like, is it in gridlock right now because everyone's waiting to see who falls first? You have a theory. Also, 2 years, $11 million for David Long. I know he hasn't been healthy, but that's not bad. All right, never mind.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Injury wise, and remember, Florida, no state income tax. So really, that's like,
yeah.
You know, it's like $14
million. Nice deal.
So, with Juju, they are really going to try, guys. They are trying very hard to retain Juju Smith-Schuster. Obviously, if that happens, then you can shift your attention towards the draft, because I still think they want to draft a receiver in this year's draft or whatever. But here's the thing. The Bears traded for DJ Moore. They had the most money to spend when free agency, quote unquote, began last week. Mm-hmm. That tells you all you need to know. Some team is going to trade.
Real long pauses. Ugh.
Some team
with the show.
Sorry. Some team is going to probably trade for DeAndre Hopkins as soon as we stop recording. I don't know if it's the Chiefs. Obviously, I think another small wrinkle in this is Odell Beckham Jr. And we do know that the Chiefs were at his workout. We know the Chiefs have been eyeing Odell Beckham Jr. since the middle of last season, even before they traded for Kadarius Toney. So that's sort of a, you know, yes, we understand that if DJ Moore was traded for when the Bears could basically sign any free agent that they wanted, but obviously they targeted him as a part of the package deal with the trade for the first overall pick, then you can start to understand why the receiver market is not what it's been in years past. There is no unassailable option on the market. I think, as Seth says, there are productive players, there are functional players, there are scheme-specific players, and to Juju Smith's, I think, advantage here, he checks all those things for the Chiefs because obviously they just went through the last season and he played very well when he was on the field. But yes, there's injury concerns. He's had concussions, obviously, in the past. His knee flared up at numerous points last season. So the Chiefs understand that they are in a good position right now. And then you see if the market, if someone says, hey, we'll give, you know, we're going to adjust our maybe initial offer or second offer or third and say, hey, now we'll give you this and see if the Chiefs want to match it. And I think that's where it's going to come down to. But I think the Chiefs' original framework was about trying to figure out what we're doing at left tackle, because they basically started that the moment that they chose not to franchise tag Orlando Brown. And then I think the second thing is we need to retain one of our own, and the one we've prioritized most is Juju Smith-Schuster.
With that being said, I know we don't have a ton of time left here, Seth, but if you've got an extra 5 minutes or so in your pocket and wanted to share it with us, telling us a little bit about this story that you can read in depth and see the clips and all on the Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. What should the Chiefs do with Juju?
Okay. I like Juju Smith-Schuster. But if it were me and I was running the show, I would look at what he brings to the table and what he does not. And I would probably say, yeah, if you're willing to come back for, you know, $8 to $10 million a year. And maybe. And even then, the 10's a little rich for me.
And that's a little less than MVS is making.
Yeah, right? Like it would be like, right. I would be willing average to do a little more than MVS because I think Juju's a better player. But I also think he's been less available. And he also, MVS does a very specific thing in how he forces defenses to account for him in a way that the Juju isn't really like a scheme bender, right? He doesn't really force teams away from anything other than maybe arguably zone coverage, because he, like Travis Kelce, really understands where to find the holes. And there's value in that. But he's not really a separator. And that can be problematic. He's a very good possession receiver. And there's a lot of value there. The thing that tips the scales for me, it really is the knee flaring up last year. I don't know why the Chiefs would ever expect. Like turn on the Niners game. Well, I'm sending people to games today, apparently. That's what I'm doing. And look at how explosive Smith-Schuster looked in that game. Like, it's not like, you know, he wasn't, you know, Tyreek Hill running around out there. But compare that to multiple other games. And that's where it gets tough for me to swallow. When you've got a guy that you're never 100% sure week to week, whether or not he's going to be a really, really good possession receiver who actually provides a little bit of juice deep, or a good possession receiver that has to sit out some snaps. You know, like not knowing what I'm getting week to week with that, it would give me pause in terms of what I'm paying. And I do think it's a good idea there to kind of let him see what the market's willing to offer. Because I think there are guys that can do some of the stuff he does and then also maybe threaten the third level of the field.
Can I interest you in Alan Lazard? If, as Trey Wingo has said on Twitter, Aaron Rodgers will be traded to the New York Jets.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Alan Lazard, it can do some of the things that Juju Smith-Schuster can do. You know?
Can Adam Thielen?
Adam Thielen.
I'm afraid. I like this 1 year. We texted about this. This is a much longer conversation to have at some point. But I really, and someone on Twitter made this correction when I said it there too, so I'm going to get their amendment, but like.
He's 33, Josh.
I like the 1 year come get a ring, catch passes from a home veteran kind of player and a receiver drafted in the second or third round and just doing that every single year. Someone on Twitter pointed out, as long as they have Travis Kelce, and I'm with that. And then at some point when Travis Kelce in 40 or 50 years, whenever he retires, they go, follow his acting career. Then that strategy changes some. And part of my draft pick and vet strategy, because I think you had a good counterpoint to this, Nate, but part of my strategy there would be you hope that one of those receivers, let's say you draft three receivers over the course of 3 years. I think you hope one of them's good, one of them is like great, and one of them underachieves, right? If you could get that split, then I think you could build an actual receiving core out of that. I mean, look, we've talked about Braxton Berrios on this show. Robert Woods got cut. Adam Thielen got cut.
If Braxton Berrios walks through that door.
Man, this show will be unstoppable. This will be better than when they drafted Joshua Williams.
Hey, get him on the phone. What are you doing right now? Hey, Braxton, you ready to run some option routes?
And that really is like the big thing for the Chiefs is, you know, find a guy who can punish teams for playing zone. That's not terribly hard to do. Like Adam Thielen, not what he was, but he can still separate a little on, you know, whips and slants, which is basically all Juju separates against in man coverage. Whips, slants, you know, really short curl. Like, that's just not his thing. So that's where, to me, it's like, okay, if Adam Thielen can do a lot of what you can do, should you be getting X dollars? Now, when Juju's totally healthy, it's a little bit different. Yeah. But yeah, it's just a tough call overall. He's a really difficult call. It was easier for me to say, nah, you can't pay Orlando Brown top of the market money. Juju Smith-Schuster, it's like, I could see either way. Because he was very valuable to last year in multiple games. His stats didn't always show the importance of some of those third down catches and stuff. And then obviously the second half of the Super Bowl, it was Mahomes was like, it's him and Kelce. Unless like Sky Moore is so open that like, you know, it's embarrassing.
For context, ladies and gentlemen, I covered Braxton Berrios when he was a phenomenal football player in high school in Raleigh, North Carolina. So again, if Braxton Berrios walks through that door, oh, come on, y'all. This was a decade ago. So hey, shout out to everybody at Leesville Road High School in Raleigh, North Carolina. Okay, now I'm acting like I'm gonna look into it, y'all. Is what I'm saying. Basically, like I'm gonna look into it. Now, Braxton Berrios is not a member of the Athletics' top 150 free agents, but we ain't worried about that. He's not my Juju replacement.
He's in the mix.
Of course he's in the mix. But he, you know, Justin Watson wasn't on the Athletics' top 150 last year, and look what he did. Exactly. He caught a Super Bowl pass. He caught a pass in the Super Bowl. You know, hey, just saying.
I'm gonna come up with a different Tom Hanks movie to name Braxton Berrios after. Like, I will figure it out, man. I am ready. We can start calling him Otto. Tom Hanks' most beloved work. That one movie that nobody saw with a slightly sort of off-putting trailer. Come on.
But hey, you know, look. I enjoy Trey Ringo. He's saying that Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Jet. I just need to know what time is this going to happen, okay? What time? You know, shout out to Lindsay Jones. She was like, if he does this to me on Oscar night, and I laughed for like literally 5 minutes. So yeah, when's it going to happen? But you know, Braxton Berrios was released from the Jets because he making $60 million next year, guys. 60. And look, he was a back-to-back MVP. It all makes sense. And he's going to be 40. He could throw to somebody who's wide open, right? I mean, because guys were open last year for a team that plays in New Jersey, who represents New York City. I mean, guys were open. It's just, you know, Quentin Williams is really good at football.
With that being said, if you want more on Juwan Taylor, Nate already has a story on him up in The Athletic right now. If you want to read a little more about how the Chiefs got here with Orlando Brown or what Seth thought about Juwan Taylor and some of the other options throughout the rest of the offseason, that's all up in the Chiefs North newsletter, along with that Juju Smith-Schuster film review. And I think we're probably on like a light emergency pod watch. We'll see if any moves happen that necessitate a breaking of the podcast glass. And if not, if it's, you know, more littler moves and just kind of getting things in line over the next week, we'll talk to y'all again next Monday. So with that being said, unless Seth has anything to say, I always feel like I should check just in case. I don't know why. I just don't like it when the show ends, and I feel like Seth is a real gem in the chamber. But if Seth was ready to pass the baton over to Nate, we can get out of here.
The Taylor article film review should be up tomorrow.
Yeah!
This is why I asked these open-ended questions. I get so busy teasing and plugging all of the stories you already have out, I forget about the ones that aren't out yet. And Seth, hey, I just want to say thank you for not trying to uphold your near radio silence as you promised on Twitter 10 minutes before the show began. It really made me nervous that you're just going to go, you know what? I don't have any opinions yet. I'll tell you next week.
Oh, yeah, I could have said I could have actually been reading this up. I don't know, guys. It's hard to say. Yeah.
Tough to know for sure. I mean, he seems like he plays offensive tackle.
Oh, my God.
Nate, I don't know what you've got for us today, but I think the show is done. Should have been done 10 minutes ago.
It really could have. But, hey, I got a little something for you. A little promotion for a friend of the pod, of a colleague. You're not going to know where this is going from A to B, but here we go, guys. Shout out to Russ and Dot, who, as I think a lot of people know, is writing a book on Patrick Mahomes. It's called Kingdom Quarterback. He is co-writing it with Mark Dent. There's an excerpt in the Washington Post. You should go read it. Kingdom Quarterback comes out in August. You can pre-order it now. I think it's $30. You should go ahead and do it. Russ and Dot is obviously excellent at what he does. He helps cover the Chiefs from time to time, including the Super Bowl. I am also going to point you in the direction of the Instagram account for Kingdom Quarterback. It is Mahomes Book at Instagram, basically Instagram.com/Mahomes Book. Go check it out. They could enjoy the new followers that they get. The reason why I'm telling you this, kids, is on February 26th, Mahomes Book put this on Instagram. I am reading specifically, word for word. I hope you all enjoy where this is going. Quote, one of the most interesting things about Kansas City International Airport is that its unique design, a 3 horseshoe-shaped terminals that allow people to pull their cars right up to the gate became obsolete within days of its grand opening in 1972. The origins of the design stem from the hopes that TWA, the long headquartered in Kansas City, would make Kansas City a main hub for supersonic air travel. The same week the airport opened, however, 3 men hijacked Southern Airways Flight 49 shortly after takeoff from Birmingham, Alabama. The saga lasted 2 days, including 2 different trips to Havana, Cuba.
What?
In parentheses, it's a wild story, exclamation point, parentheses. And ultimately resulted in more rigorous physical security screenings at U.S. airports. That wasn't ideal for KCI, whose design wasn't built for central located security checkpoints, and it ultimately proved costly. The era of supersonic flights never happened either. Guys, we have a new airport, but I just want you to know that in 1972, there is an advertisement that says you could take a 75 walk from the curbside to the jetway. And I'm glad we don't live in those times anymore.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.